and welcome to the hearing. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I am Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album from 1971, Led Zeppelin 4. This is our 100th episode. We have to do something ridiculously popular.
Damn, 100. I can't believe we've done 100 of these.
And that's not counting the test episode, because you never like to count that one. So that first episode where we reviewed the Estron singles doesn't count. So technically, we've recorded 101 episodes of the hearing.
For old time's sake, did we have a hum running through that first episode, too?
No, fortunately. My computer was much better. Led Zeppelin were an English rock band formed in London in 1968. They are often cited as one of the progenitors of hard rock and heavy metal and have been credited as significantly impacting the nature of the music industry, particularly the development of album-oriented rock and stadium rock. I love Zeppelin, but that is something to hold against them. Many critics consider Led Zeppelin one of the most innovative and influential rock groups in history. The band's untitled fourth studio album, commonly known as Zeppelin 4 or Zozo or Runes or a number of other names, was released on November 8, 1971 by Atlantic Records, produced by Jimmy Page, and features Robert Plant on vocals and harmonica, Jimmy Page on electric and acoustic guitars and mandolin, John Paul Jones on bass, electric piano, mandolin, recorders, and synthesizer. I did not, as well as I know this album, I did not know it had synthesizers until I did this research. And John Bonham on drums, with additional musicians Sandy Denny, vocals on Battle of Evermore, and Ian Stewart, piano on Rock and Roll. Reminder, I don't edit any songs into our episodes for copyright reasons, but on our blog at johnandscotto.com, you'll find links to Led Zeppelin 4 on Spotify and YouTube, so you can listen along if you'd like. On to track one, Black Dog. Black Dog was named after a dog that hung around the Headley Grange recording studio. During recording, the riff was written by Page and Jones, while the a cappella section was influenced by Fleetwood Mac's Oh Well. I love Oh Well. It was kind of one of those signature songs I played on guitar for many years. I never got the connection.
Huh. I don't think I did either. I'm not sure if I'm familiar with it, actually.
I love Oh Well. Well, I'll find it for you after we're done recording. It's old Fleetwood Mac before Buckingham and Nicks.
Right.
Peter Greener. Love the reverb on the vocal. Of course, that angular off-time riff is just classic. I never learned to play it on guitar, but I recently learned to play it on ukulele.
Really?
Works really well. I mean, it's a bit higher, but yeah, it works. Love the punchy bass tone. We listened to the remastered version, or I did at least, on Spotify. And I never noticed the bass on this track until now, and it's just this nice, thick, punchy tone.
Oh, yeah, I think it's hard. It was always hard for me to miss. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just the word punch is like a really good, you know, description for this, because it is like a fist to the jaw. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect opener.
Yeah. Love the drums in the Oh Yeah section. That harmonized guitar after Steady Rollin' Woman that comes in with the riff just harmonized a little bit higher. And then there's just this classic guitar solo.
I mean, this would be something I'd play for an alien.
Absolutely.
The crossover movie that we did this week.
Right.
You know, for an alien that never heard music before. And like, okay, so this is what rock music is.
Yeah, honestly, if I could have gotten the right, Stairway would have been the perfect choice for the first music he heard. I probably honestly haven't listened to this album since like the early 90s.
But really?
I still knew it like the back of my hand.
Yeah.
On to track two, Rock and Roll. Just an iconic opening drum part that...
Right.
Bonzo came up with while jamming to Little Richard's Keep On Knockin'.
I was going to say, it's a very jazz drummer sound to it.
Yeah. And you just can't beat a well-played 12-bar blues.
I've always thought this might have been a little too on the nose, this one, though. I mean, it's rock and roll. They're playing rock and roll. You know, it's very...
But much like we discussed last week when we reviewed B.B. King. It's not actually rock and roll that he's talking about.
True.
It's been a long time since I rock and rolled. Been a long time since I did the stroll. It's not what he's talking about.
Sure.
He's frustrated.
The other question is this a bit too much right after Black Dog? I mean, I get what they're doing here.
Yeah.
They're going for this 1-2 punch right off the beginning of the album. But I kind of found the track listing for this a bit unbalanced, if you think about it.
That's a fair point. You put the two real heavy songs right up top.
Right.
Yeah. Rock and Roll I agree, would have been better, you know, later in the track listing.
I think this would have been a great song to have opened the second side with. I mean, think about the second side just opening with that drum.
Okay, yes. I'm thinking, okay, if you put that in five, put that in five instead of Misty Mountain Hop, and you move Misty Mountain Hop between the next two.
Right.
Because you want something kind of upbeat between the two kind of ballady things.
Because that's the other problem. Like, the other half of this side is, you know, you have the two
slow songs.
Ballady,
yeah.
Like, right on top of each other, and it's kind of like, And of course, I guess I should have warned people that I was going to be blasphemous a little bit. You know? So, sorry, guys.
What, because we're criticizing those Zeppelin 4?
Yes.
If we're reviewing it, we're criticizing it. I mean, I'm very late in the criticism, but you know, I am agreeing with you on that. On to track 3, Battle of Evermore. Plant's lyrics for this one were inspired by a book he was reading about the Scottish Independence Wars. Plant played the role of the narrator in the song, describing the events, while guest vocalist Sandy Denny sang the part of the town crier representing the people. I never knew what was about that. I just thought it was some Tolkien bullshit.
You know, that's kind of what I thought too, but I've always loved this.
Oh, yes, one of my favorites on the album. I adore it.
It's just so beautiful. There's just no other way to describe that.
After having a
mallet beating you over the head with the first two songs,
right,
to just do this complete turnabout,
right,
and just have this mandolin with these harmonies and the feminine voice with Plant's voice too. I almost made a little joke about Plant's voice being feminine itself.
But yeah, that mandolin part is amazing. One of the reasons I took up mandolin, this song, pretty much this song in the Hooters. Plant and Denny's voices work beautifully together.
Oh yeah. I had a friend who thought that it was really just Plant singing both parts somehow. And they were growing. I was like, but I don't know, it sounds so different. I heard a lot of Zeppelin because my buddy had of course, the usual classic rock station, of course. But my buddy had gotten the box set with the crop, you know, the crop circle box set. So I heard a lot of this shit, like, out of order in different parts of the first place. I've listened to the album myself a few times at least, but, you know.
Yeah, my best friend growing up, Rob, you know him as Grimace. Was a huge Zeppelin fan. Probably still is. So he introduced me to all this stuff back when I was in grade school. We back in the day thought Paige sang the other part.
Right. So I just assumed my buddy had notes, you know, but I don't think they did in that box set. And
we probably both had it on cassette, which, you know, notoriously never had liner notes. But yeah, love how their voices work together. Love how the mandolin and guitars are panned, because it's two guitars and a mandolin kind of panned across the spectrum. Beautiful harmonies in the chorus. And then we get into the later part of the song, and the vocals start to kind of swirl together.
Right.
They kind of just overlap each other more.
I think that's why he thought it was a voiceover. Yeah, or not a voiceover. What's the word I'm looking for? It was overdubbed.
Yeah.
Because there's so much of that going on, and there is a bit of overdubbing going on, but
I'm sure
not, you know, they're overdubbing their own voices.
Right. But yeah, they just swirl together. There's at the beginning, there's this clear distinction. One sings a line, then the other sings a line. And then that distinction melts away. I love the echo on the Bring It Back part at the end.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful song. On to track 4, Stairway to Heaven. Taking the Coward's Way Out.
I'm actually doing the opposite.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's brave. This is the blasphemy you're talking about.
Yeah, it was kind of hinting at there was more to come.
Okay.
I'm picking this for the weakest on the track, on the album.
Wow, okay.
And hear me out. Okay. I know before you FedEx me Rotten Tomatoes, everybody out there. They say there's three parts, but there's really two. You've got your ballad section and your rock section.
A lot of them count like when the drums come in as a separate section.
Now, the ballad section, it's not as good as Evermore or California, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
And the rock section isn't as good as, I don't know about any other rock song on the album, actually. Yeah. I mean, what's really here is the tension between and the pairing of the two sections together.
Hmm.
That's really it. Like, the songs on their own, the lyrics are kind of goofy. And they almost don't even seem to go with the music about, his anti-materialism thing and, just put into this epic format. Sure,
that's a fair point.
It kind of feels like they're trying to jump on the newly growing prog bandwagon and riding that out. And I just don't think that's what they do best.
There's actually a song by the band Spirit that was released a few years earlier that they are very much ripping off. You know about this.
Yeah. It does. And they do sound.
Yeah.
They opened for Spirit in their first U.S. tour.
Mm-hmm. As much as I love Zeppelin, they were just unrepentant thieves.
Yeah.
They went to court for it a few times. But I do like how the opening guitar and either Mellotron or recorders, possibly both, were panned. It's a beautiful melody. Great tone on the electric when it comes on and comes in verse two. Nice little electric pianos. Love the fill when the drums come in. The chord solo. Actually, the chord solo is my favorite part. That big fanfare. That's just
That is nice. Yeah.
And the guitar solo proper is just iconic. The end, I think Plant's voice has some nice punch to it, goes nicely through the mix. And there's the nice gradual slow end. But, I kind of had a Down Under experience, where, Down Under was that song, that I kind of ignored and kind of, bashed a lot until we reviewed Business as Usual, and I kind of fell in love with it again.
I have always loved Down Under, though. That was like, if I was DJing an 80s party, that was going to be on the list.
But, I had that experience with Stairway, because I really have actively tried to avoid Stairway for, probably 20, 30 years. But I did really enjoy it. Though I can't disagree with your points about, if you look at it as separate songs, they're not as strong as the similar songs on the album.
I think the rock part, the later part, is definitely stronger than the ballad part at the beginning. It's kind of that tension builder, the ballad. It's just the opening part is just an excuse to build tension to get to that, to prop up the rock part.
Mm-hmm. On to track 5, Misty Mountain Hop. Plant wrote the lyrics about dealing with the clash between students and police over drug possession. No surprise there, it's pretty much the hippie anthem. Love the electric piano, nice groove, great harmonies in the verse. Love the bass part in the pre-chorus. Thing is, it doesn't really go anywhere, but it's fun. And
it is.
For that reason, it's my pick for week. It's just because I had to pick one, and it's kind of a monotone song, but it's a lot of fun. Love the harmonized guitar solo and that little riff at the end of the solo.
I was off. Which one you were going to pick? Which one I thought you were going to pick is weakest?
What did you think?
The next one, actually.
Oh well, next one was one of my possibilities for favorite.
But I honestly think now all of my blasphemy is pretty much done, because I believe this side could be one of the most perfect sides of an album ever made, actually.
So the
second side.
Your only issue with the album is that the first two should have been spread out more.
Yes.
And Stairway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. That's pretty much it from here.
Yeah.
Normally, it's funny, I've put down JPJ's keyboard playing on other songs, of course, you know, like that solo from All of My Love.
The whole song, the whole of All of My Love can be put down.
That's true. That's true. But this, I mean, this is just so funky. I mean, like, this is Stevie Wonder inspired, which you would not expect a band like Led Zeppelin to do.
Have you heard
And
Trampled Underfoot?
yeah, well, yeah, of course. Did that come to you? I'm trying to remember. Wait a minute. Was
That's
that
Physical Graffiti, I think.
that? Yeah, I was gonna say that came
A
after
couple
that.
albums
So,
later.
yeah. So you wouldn't expect them at this point.
Oh, at this
This is
point, yeah.
70 fucking one.
Right.
So, yeah, it almost would get my pick for second strongest. This one,
I
it
mean,
was pretty damn close.
I still love it. I didn't want to have to say it's the weakest, but I had to pick one, and it's just kind of monotonous in a little bit.
Ah, you left the assholery for me in Stairway.
I like Stairway again. I rediscovered it. On to track six, four stick. Track four. Track six, four sticks. That was tough to say. Takes its title from Bonham playing the drum part with four actual sticks, two in each
How
hand.
does Bonham not have a writing credit on this? It
He
says
does.
Page Plant
It does.
in my
The version I saw,
notes.
Bonzo was credited.
He damn well should have been.
The track also features Jones playing analog synth,
Yeah.
which I
It's like 10 years ahead of its time.
never picked up on until I listened to this version. Love everything about the drums. The
This
riff
is
is
like New Wave
beautiful.
before New Wave. It's crazy, this song.
Great. The guitar tone is ginormous. Great vocal gymnastics. The synth in the chorus, guitars in the chorus are great. Chorusing on a guitar basically doubles the sound of a guitar, makes it sound like there are two playing at once. The second chorus maybe goes on a bit too long before they get back to the riff.
It might have meandered a bit too long, but I just love the it's just so entrancing, you know?
Love the synth solo, which I never realized was a synth solo until tonight.
Yeah.
Neil Young gets a lot of credit for grunge, but I think this one was also one of those kind of things that grunge pulled a lot from. That kind of, entranced. Like, I hear a lot of Soundgarden here.
Oh, I mean, I hear Pearl Jam's Up My Tree from this one. And of course, they take the next one too.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, well, I mean, as I said when we reviewed No Code, Eddie Vedder is a folk singer.
Yeah. But you put this in, like, Here Comes the Sun together, and you have, like, you know, him and George Harrison were fucking time travelers. Like, they just knew it. Yeah. And, you know, it was funny to bring up the Beatles too, because Stairway has a day in the life feel and the structure of two things being put together.
Beatles did it better. I mean, that's not blasphemy, I don't think.
Yeah.
One band you could say did it better than Zeppelin, and nobody's going to be upset.
Yeah.
On to track seven, Going to California. Another one in contention for favorite, but I mean
Oh, yeah.
now the my what I picked is obvious because it's not this. Written by Plant and Page about Californian earthquakes and trying to find the perfect woman. Interesting juxtaposition of topics. The music was inspired by Joni Mitchell, of whom both Page and Plant were fans. This was just a
That's
nice
why
change
when
of
Pearl Jam swiped it for Given to Fly, at least the acoustic part, that they didn't get up in arms because it's like, well, we took this other thing.
I was actually watching something about oh it was when the Beastie Boys sampled the o I think it was the ocean.
Yeah.
They didn't care. They were cool with it because it's like
Right.
yeah, we borrowed enough in our time.
Right. Of course you can't. I mean, it'd be ridiculous to get mad when you borrowed this much.
But
It's weird. It's this is very 60s specific, but it's also timeless, you know? You can feel someone play this in almost any era, you know? It's youth, it's wonder, it's adventure.
And it's just a nice change of pace because even with another ballad, two other ballads, it just has a different feel to it. Love how the guitars and mandolin blend. I used
Yeah.
to play this on guitar all the time. It was a lot of fun. I should learn
Oh,
it
I
on
bet.
uke. It's just like three chords. Love the melody. Love that little instrumental section between the verses. Love when the vocal goes up and gets really intense on the bridge. Throw me a line part.
Oh, yeah.
And those ahs at the end.
Right. It ends with those strange vocalizations that it makes it kind of ghostly. Like,
yeah.
Your youth is gone that fast, and suddenly you're just in this different world. I don't know. I don't know if there's a song that sums up life better than this, honestly. I probably really should say this is my strongest, but I'm not gonna.
It was close for me, but then track 8.
It's this whole goddamn side. That's why you probably wouldn't want to break it up all that much, because this side is just so solid. And for a second side.
But you swap out rock and roll for going to Cal for Misty Mountain Hop.
For Misty Mountain Hop. Yeah.
You improve side 2.
That's true.
But like I said, that was a very, very close to being my favorite. But then track 8, When the Levee Breaks. This is heavily inspired and basically a cover of a blues song of the same name recorded by Memphis Minnie and Kansas Joe McCoy in 1929. I've listened to that song. The lyrics are basically the same.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is my favorite. The drums same are just here. Epic.
Right.
The groove is amazing. The riff is amazing. Love the harmonica. I normally complain about long jams and getting monotonous, but that long jam in the beginning is just beautiful. Love that little part, that slide part right before the vocal comes in, and how playful the vocal is. You know, it doesn't go real deep and bluesy and serious and emotional, though I did relate to it particularly now. But it's just kind of playful. And then there's that fanfare guitar part right after the first two verses. And that's the only way I can describe it as a fanfare. That leads into this next section with a slide guitar. And then a harmonica solo in the middle.
Right. Who was the harmonica player?
Robert Plant.
Yeah?
And it's just ghostly. From what I read, it was actually recorded backwards.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they were playing with a lot of acoustics, like in that weird building were in, like in the lobby. Mm-hmm. Like
the drums
were just fucking around with it.
The drums, I think, on this one, I think, were recorded in the lobby. That's not that unusual, recording in other places in a studio to get the right sound. It's, you know, recording in a stairwell is kind of a notorious thing to do because you get the echoes, or bathrooms, you know, famous for the echoes because of all the tile. But yeah, I just love all the experimentation. Zeppelin has been so mythologized.
Yes.
That they've kind of become a bit of a joke over the years. And you tend to forget that they really were as amazing as their legend says. You know, for all the thievery, they were an incredible band.
Yeah, this is just such a climax to the album. Yeah, yeah. It's just literally... I mean, what do I have in my notes? It's my pick for strongest because it's, quote, fucking going down.
And actually, but if
it's hard rock, it's blues, it's grungy, it's just, and to do that to a blues song, it's just the way blues, you know. Right.
Yeah. It's actually absolutely in the spirit of it.
Yeah.
You refer to it as the climax, and I'm thinking, okay, here's another shift in the order. Put Going California afterwards as a denouement.
Mm.
End it with those ahs. End the album with those ahs.
Nah, it has to end with When the Levee Breaks. It has to be that last, like, weird little, you know,
that little, yeah, little slide thing, yeah.
Note, yeah.
Which I actually forgot about until I heard it on the record, and I just love that little, I don't know,
oh, yeah, at the end. Of course. I mean, and this is the end of the world, you know? Yeah, it's playful, but this is the fucking apocalypse. Yeah, this is everything just being flooded out.
Right. So, again, obvious foolish question. Do you recommend it?
Of course.
Yeah.
The second side of this is just ridiculous.
I mean, it's fucking Zeppelin 4. Of course, I recommend it, too. It's overplayed and maybe a bit overhyped, but it's still an absolutely seminal album by one of the most important artists in the history of music. If you
enjoy... I gotta go back to listening to Houses of Holy, because that had been my pick, you know, for a long time of like favorite Zeppelin album. But I don't know.
I think that's still my favorite. This one is, and I'll get back to my pre-scripted little recommendation. but, you know, I've gone on this rant before about how a lot of bands have that album that the pseudo fans, the kind of general public and the people who don't really know them really love. And then the real hardcore fans probably usually love something else. And it usually varies from fan to fan. With Rush, famously, the public album is Moving Pictures, which is a great album. But the hardcore fans usually like something else. With Floyd, I doubt any hardcore Floyd fans really love Dark Side or The Wall.
Well, Floyd fans are split
in
many different ways.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's no one album that every hardcore Floyd fan is going to love, but it's not the super popular ones.
Zeppelin at least had the common sense of just, okay, this is us. Mm-hmm. And then when, you know, Bonzo passed, to pretty much say,
we're not Zeppelin anymore.
They'll do some one-offs, but they're not going to do any new albums or anything.
With Zeppelin, 4 is the one that is like, you know, everybody knows Zeppelin 4 and reveres it for good reason. But the hardcore Zeppelin fans usually like something else. Frequently Houses or Physical Graffiti. Those are the two that are most, or three. Three is real popular too among hardcores because it's like the folk album.
Yeah.
But what I was getting to with my pre-scripted recommendation, if you enjoy rock and roll, the genre, but you somehow have never heard this album, stop what you're doing right now, pause this episode, or just don't bother listening to the rest because we're almost done. Go to those links I mentioned earlier and listen to it right now.
And tell the folks of Hondo we said hi.
Yeah. And that's it for Zeppelin 4. Until 2 weeks from now, when we'll be reviewing 10 Hours by 1st of October. 1st of October is a two-person, one-day-a-year band. And that's all I'm going to tell you for now. until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.